NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant making, leadership training, and convening. Good afternoon and welcome to our special Main Street broadcast from the Clay County Fair in Barnesville. I'm Rachel Reeby. We're broadcasting from the band shelter on the fairgrounds. The 4-H Sheep Show is going on. The carnival with games of skill and chance and rides to make your heart jump and your stomach drop has just opened. Tonight's grandstand is the antique tractor pull. Barnesville is a small farm town in the Red River Valley, about 20 miles south of Fargo-Moorhead. This is the second of four Minnesota Citizens Forum programs this summer on Minnesota agriculture. Our show is a joint venture between Minnesota Public Radio, KTCA Public Television, the Star Tribune newspaper, and the University of Minnesota Extension Services. As part of this forum, county extension agents around the state have convened discussion groups to listen to the program. 35 gatherings in 35 counties. We'll hear specifically from two of those groups, one down in Worthington and another in St. Paul. This hour, we're focusing on the personal toll of the farm crisis. Farmers are struggling with feelings of failure and despair. Many are tired of fighting nature and government policies, but it's not easy to walk away from land that's been in the family for generations. My guest this afternoon is psychologist Val Farmer. Welcome, Dr. Farmer.
Welcome. Thank you, Rachel.
Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments. You can join our conversation today by calling us at 1-800-537-5252, 1-800-537-5252. Dr. Farmer, we've spent an hour talking about the financial crisis facing farmers. Let's talk now about the psychological pressure that they're under.
I think the first thing is what you've already heard, the loss of control, especially when it comes to prices and weather and circumstances spinning out of control. And with that comes high anxiety, apprehension, and worry about how to meet the bills, how to cover expenses, how to be in business next year, and to fulfill your hopes and dreams. And also depression, when you feel like your ability to achieve your long-term goals is being blocked and there's no way it can happen, then people get depressed, they get discouraged, their mood slips, they can't sleep, they have appetite problems, they are really suffering emotionally.
Some people listening might say, well, I have job pressure and stress. I may lose my job. I'm having financial problems, too. What makes it even more difficult for farmers? What are the added stresses that the rest of the population may not be experiencing?
There's the generational imperative of passing on the farm down to the next generation and feeling like you've responsible for that and having the next generation being able to farm. I think it's a deep attachment to the community and the friends and the relatives that you've known all your life. I think it's the act of farming, of nurturing young life, of bonding with animals and helping crops grow and all of the morality that's involved in that and being needed. It's a profession where you have to be out there and respond to the situations, and you get what people serve and do, they become attached to, and so there's deep bonds with farming itself. Being independent, being your own boss, and being able to make decisions and respond on a variety of issues each day. And the husband-wife partnership also, as man and wife being in business together and taking different roles and enjoying the experience of living on a farm, raising children on a farm, and also liking hard work. There's a lot of people who really thrive on work, and they understand work and how good work helps them feel good about themselves.
You have been in the counseling business for decades, so you have come through the farm crisis of the 80s as well. How is this different this time around? Is it at about the same level of intensity in terms of farmer stress, or is it a whole different ballgame this time?
Well, I think if your farm is in jeopardy, the emotions are about the same no matter what decade you enter into this process. But I think there's some more awareness of this crisis unfolding over time. The 80s caught people by surprise, and there was a lot of anger and bewilderment and looking for the blame. Particularly the lending industry came under scrutiny, and this time around I think it's more detachment, that this is a bigger system, the world economy and the things that we've heard about. And so people have been watching this bill, they're getting worn out, they're on a treadmill, they feel like they're not getting ahead and they don't see any hope. And so there's the people being proactive about getting out of farming, of thinking ahead, trying to preserve their equity, and not being so wedded to the idea that they need to farm completely. And there's a more of a passive acceptance, like the ABC Nightline show Silent Surrender, that there's a kind of a giving into the process rather than fighting back.
If you go out with a whimper instead of a bang and a big shouting angry voice, does it make it any easier to deal with, or is it just as painful?
It's just as painful. I think the people that go out with shouting voices have to deal with the whimper later. It's just prolonging the depression, but eventually people do get to a whimper in terms of the losses that they've experienced, the pain that they go through, and losing a lifestyle that they cherish and an occupation that they really are good at and love.
Lowell Nelson was born and raised on a fertile piece of farmland not far from us here in the Red River Valley. He worked the land just as his father had and assumed his sons would take over the farm from him. But after almost 50 years on the farm, Nelson is one of the farmers calling it quits this year. He says he's financially ruined. The crisis has also taken a toll on his physical health. Life-saving heart surgery in the spring left him with a paralyzed voice box. Lowell Nelson is joining us now at the Clay County Fair in Barnesville, along with two of his three sons. Welcome to all of you. Mr. Nelson, you've ridden the highs and the lows of farming for decades. Why are you getting out now?
Well, first of all, Rachel, thank you for inviting me here to be here today. It's just been too costly for me as far as my health is concerned. The stress level has just been too much to bear. And I've had a lot of adjustments to make in the last 3 months as to where my priorities are. And my priorities right now are getting my health back and staying around here and being with my family.
Were there a number of times over the past 20 years where you thought, I'm getting out, no, I'm staying in, no, I'm going to get out this time, no, I'm going to stay in? Or have you really never considered it before this year?
I have never, ever considered getting out of farming.
No matter how bad it got?
Never.
You felt you could ride it through?
Absolutely. It's just some type of a cycle, you know, where next year will be better. The farmer is the eternal optimist. You know, next year will be better. And that's what you live on. That's what you survive on. I have never, ever thought that I would ever have to try and find something else to do to earn a living to support my family. And there's never, ever been a time where I've wanted to do something else than farm until just recently.
Do you want to do something else now, or you just know that you can't continue the farm?
I just know that I can't continue to farm. I am physically unable to farm ever again.
So at 54 years old, you're looking at a major life change that you never anticipated and you never wanted.
Never, ever. My wife and I, we made some money farming. I mean, I've been farming on my own for 33 years. And you don't do things wrong for 33 years and continue in the business. So whenever we had a profit, we would put it back into the farm, pay off the land debt, things like that, because the land someday was going to be our retirement. Well, now that's gone. Everything we've worked for all of our lives is gone. And now we're starting over, basically, from day one. And I don't know at this point in time what I'm going to be doing. My main concern right now is getting my health back so that maybe I can go back into the job market and do something, but I'm not even sure that I'm going to be physically able to do that until about another month from now, where we do some more testing on my aorta and find out how that has progressed.
You told me when we talked earlier, sir, that the feelings of failure, the feelings of shame and failure, but when we're talking about a global market and the Asian crisis and the bottom dropping out of the prices, do you still take that as your own failure when it has nothing to do with your hard work?
Absolutely. I feel that I have failed every farmer around here, that things are going wrong. They think it's their fault. They think that they have failed, when in fact, none of this is our fault. We are not to blame for $1.35 for new crop corn. Not just because I went out and planted another 100 acres last spring am I the cause of that price, but we do feel that way, that we have brought this upon ourselves, and we need to tell ourselves that no, this is not our fault. This is not something that we have brought upon ourselves. It is our government and some of the policies that they have enacted that are totally wrong and that are affecting us and that are taking us out of our living and our livelihood and something we've done for years.
And it's also nature. We had Congressman Peterson sit here and say, it's looked like this for 7 years. It's been cold and wet. You have had droughts. You have had floods. You have had plague. I mean, you've had every kind of pestilence that an area could have, you've had here. So do some of those, do you sort of share the blame around?
Oh, absolutely. The weather has had a tremendous effect on our crops. And actually, people here in the Red River Valley, we're not used to getting a crop. We always get a crop. But actually, the last 6 years in a row, it's been too wet. We've had disease. It's just one thing on top of another. And now, on top of all of that, we've got to deal with poor prices. And it is just devastating.
Our phone number is 1-800-537-5252. If you would like to join our conversation this afternoon, we would invite you to call 1-800-537-5252. Shane, you're 25 years old. You're a mortgage loan officer in Fargo. How do you feel about what's happened with your family land?
It's been tough. Right away when everything started going bad, it was hard to imagine us not farming. We've been real strong farming, but now that more time has progressed, it's not a matter of losing the farm anymore that we're concerned about. We're concerned about, you know, at age 54 for Dad, you know, he's starting over at day one, that, you know, what's he going to do now? How is he going to be able to support him and his wife? And it gets tough for us to deal with that as a whole family. It's stressful on everybody, and it takes a very emotional toll on everybody to see. You know, I loved growing up on the farm, and we had so many opportunities. Now, no, you know, neither me or any of my brothers are going to be farming the same land or raise our kids that way. They're going to be living in town and working in town like I am.
That's painful.
It's very tough to deal with because it's a lifestyle that nobody wants to give up. And when we talk to people, some of my coworkers, I mean, they're off the farm and they just, you know, would do anything to go back and live on the country.
And do you have any hope, Shane, of going back to the farm?
No, not at all. I mean, there's no chance. You need a break somewhere. You need to be able to have an in the family farm. A normal person just can't go out one day and say, hey, I'm going to start farming, go buy land, go buy equipment. It's impossible. There's absolutely no way you can get into farming that way.
And you had a perfect setup. Cody, you just graduated from high school. You're 18 years old. Your career ambitions, did you always think you'd farm on that same piece of land?
Yeah, I did. I always wanted to farm. It's a great life for me. It's the only thing I know how to do.
At what point did you think this may not be happening for me?
When the prices started going down and we started losing money.
So was this just in the last year, or have you known for the last number of years things were not going well?
Probably the last 3 years, probably.
So what are you going to do instead?
I'm going to go to NDSU and get a degree in agronomy.
So you're not getting too far away from the farm sector.
No, I want to stay something in agriculture.
Your brother says there's no way it's ever going to happen for him farming. How about for you?
I'm the same boat he is. It's going to be impossible if I ever wanted to farm again.
Is it hard to change the direction of your dreams when you assume that's what you're going to do, it's what you want to do, and you see it all there spread out in front of you?
It's a little easier for me since I'm younger and like my dad, but yeah, it's kind of hard.
It's also tough. I mean, I went to college and I started out, my first major was going to be agronomy because I had hoped at that time I was coming back to the farm. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. About 2 years into college, I started to, you know, look more at the books and realize that this, you know, one farm family's having a tough time making it. There's no way we can bring two onto the land. So I, at that time, changed my major into ag finance, and I still wanted to get into agriculture, but I, right now, doing mortgage loans, I have absolutely no dealings with agriculture, and it's great, actually, right now because of the depressed economy and farm.
So business is good for you at this point.
It's a lot better than if I was to be an ag loan officer. I would not want to be in that position right now.
Is it almost easier to be away from it?
I think so.
You see your brother going to NDSU, majoring in agronomy, maybe I can get back in some way. Do you just think, oh, get out of here?
We've had the talks. I've tried everything to do to talk him out of going into agriculture because it's not there right now, and I don't know. There's no optimism left. I can't see things turning around. And, you know, when Valerie referred to the Nightline thing, we had Dan Glickman on there, and he said they're trying to do everything they can. Well, what they're doing right now isn't good enough. They don't see anything getting better for a few years. I mean, there's just no optimism left. Why would anybody want to go into that type of field?
Our phone number is 1-800-537-5252 if you would like to join this conversation. We're talking about the psychological impact of the farm crisis. We also have a live audience here in Barnesville at the Clay County Fair. Lori Sturtevant of the Star Tribune is in our audience. Lori.
Hi, Rachel. I have with me Pat Swenson, who is a recently retired teacher but also a farm wife who has raised her family on the farm, and would like to get on this conversation with a few comments.
Yeah, so I have all raised on a farm, oldest of 11 children, so I knew what work was and I knew what I was getting into. But I just wanted to be on the farm and raise our family there, and so did my husband. And so we've been in the farming since the day we were born, I guess, and even before. And it's very hard after you built everything up, did all the building yourself and expanding and that. We are still hog farmers. And so we know what it's like to go up through ups and downs, but we are now at what you'd call the end of the road. And both of our sons who were involved in farming and helped us build it up have decided that they can't see a future for their families in the farm anymore. And so we are trying to finish off with the hog farming, rented out our land. So first time this year we haven't been out there planting and seeding. And
so you can understand what Lowell Nelson is saying.
Yes, very much. But I do want to say this, that all we ever wanted to do was to be on the farm and to raise our kids. And because I always felt that the people who were on the farm really understood what work was about and that they were good people. And I am very proud to say that all of our kids, no matter where they went, they were always considered very good workers. And some of them were hired because they were from Minnesota and from the farm. And they have always done well in their jobs. And so I am wondering, having been a teacher and seeing some of the kids that don't have that feeling, what it's going to be like when there's not the family farm anymore with that crop of wonderful kids that know how to work. Where are they going to get them to make the great improvements across Minnesota and the whole United States, where every week we've expanded and gone into, and people always say, oh, you're from Minnesota and you're from the farm, and yes, we'll hire you.
Dr. Farmer, are we missing out now on a whole way of life?
Well, losing the farm family is a loss to our country, and as that lady just described, the work ethic is taught there, and I think that may be the most painful thing of all, is not being able to raise a family on the farm once you have experienced all of those things for yourself. I think it takes a lot of creativity and thought to be able to raise responsible children who know how to work and not live on a farm, and there's a lot of people in our society that do it well, but we can't be passive in this age of entitlement and age of all of the things that are available to young people in our society. We have to consciously teach people how to work, and not enough parents are measuring up to it. I think the farm has been a valuable asset for parents and raising children, and I think our country will be poorer without a lot of young people coming off the farms.
We have Joan in Northfield on the phone. We will go to her. Good afternoon, Joan. Welcome to Main Street.
Yes, hello.
Yes, go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Yes, well, I was just going to comment on the situation. We luckily retired 5 years ago and sold our farm, so we don't have to try to survive in this, but we did survive the 80s, which were very tough, but the Freedom to Farm program was, I don't know who conjured it up, but it was more or less a freedom to fail. The crop prices had been allowed to go up so high, and people thought that this was going to be, you know, a wonderful thing, so you could produce whatever you wanted. Well, it has, of course, the crop prices didn't stay up between the conglomerates and the government. I think the farmer has in a bind, a total bind, and that's what I'd like to say.
Was it difficult for you? We've heard Lowell Nelson talk, and we heard somebody in the audience talk about leaving that life. Now, your retirement age, has that been a little bit easier, that you were thinking that this was the time of your life when you would back away from farming, or is it still unbelievably difficult to leave it?
Well, we, both my husband and I had been people that lived many different places, so we didn't have that total tie to just one piece of land like so many people have. So it wasn't like leaving a fourth generation farm or something. You know, it was more of a business for us. And when you can get more from your land, for your land, than you could get from it, farming it, why, you just about, it's a good business decision to do that. You have to sell it, you know. And we raised 8 kids on the farm. We only have one son that's farming. He's struggling, naturally.
Thank you for your comments, Joan. Lowell Nelson, would it have been so much easier if you were 68 and your three boys decided they didn't like life on the farm and they were gone? Would that be so much easier for you to walk away from it? The timing's totally off here for you, isn't it?
Yeah, the timing is terrible. If I would have been 68 years old, yes, I could have, retired. But no, it still would have hurt not to see any of my boys farm or take over the farm or have to rent it out to somebody else or to sell it. That still would have been hurtful. But it would have been an easier transition for me. One comment I'd like to make that the lady made before about the farm and the family is one thing that my farm did raise, and that's three wonderful boys.
And nobody can take that away from me.
Nobody can take that away. No.
I'm sure.
I am very, very proud of my boys, especially. You know, all three of them are just great.
But I suppose you would have liked to have seen your grandchildren raised on the farm too, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But on the other hand, I don't want to see them go through what I've gone through. I think it's natural for a father and a mother, you know, the parents, to want something better for your children than what you've had. And you don't want them to suffer and have the same problems that you've gone through.
Now that you're not farming this year, do you wake up and see these gray skies, cool temperatures, rain coming down? Do you think, oh no, the crop, are you so automatic after 50 years of doing that? Or do you look out and think, I don't care today if it rains?
Basically, I'm in a position that I don't care. But I think that my focus now, when I wake up in the morning, thank you, Lord, you've given me another day.
So it's a whole different way of looking at things.
Absolutely. With the health problems I've had, nothing is more important than being here another day.
So that's put the farm situation for you in perspective.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a good friend, dear friend of mine, stop in the other day and visit me on the farm. And he made a comment to me. He said, do you know how to make God laugh? Mike Gottlieb. Tell him your future plans.
Lowell Nelson, thank you for being with us here this afternoon. Shane and Cody, thanks for joining this conversation.
Thank you.
You're listening to a special Main Street radio broadcast from the Clay County Fair in Barnesville. I'm Rachel Reby, and we're talking about the personal toll the crisis in agriculture is taking on farmers. And we will be back with our guest psychologist, Val Farmer. This is the second of four special Minnesota Citizens Forums focusing on the farm crisis, a joint venture between NPR, KTCA Public Television, the Star Tribune newspaper, and the University of Minnesota Extension Service. NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant making, leadership training, and convening. We'll be back with more of Main Street after a look at news and weather.
Good afternoon from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. I'm Kathleen Hallinan. Flags are flying at half staff at the Kennedy Space Center in honor of Pete Conrad, the third man to walk on the moon. Conrad died in a Southern California motorcycle crash last night. He walked on the moon in 1969. Conrad died at age 69. A flash flood watch remains in effect for Las Vegas a day after a powerful summer storm swamped the desert city. Streets were turned into rivers, trapping hundreds of cars. Two deaths are blamed on the flooding. An anti-Milosevic movement is growing in Serbia. Two more city governments, including Serbia's third largest niche, have passed resolutions calling for the resignation of Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic. The economic boom isn't necessarily making it easy for Americans to pay their bills. A Census Bureau report says some 49 million Americans, about 20% of the nation, have had trouble meeting basic needs like paying rent and food bills. Many are middle class. Sarah Jane Olson has admitted she is the Symbionese Liberation Army fugitive Kathleen Salaya. The St. Paul woman signed an extradition waiver today. Next week, she will travel to Los Angeles, where she will face conspiracy charges for allegedly placing pipe bombs under two L.A. police cars in the 1970s. Top University of Minnesota administrators will have more control over booster club activities and donations. University President Mark Udoff has accepted the recommendations of a task force. Before today, there was no written policy governing booster groups. People in the southeastern Minnesota town of Lewiston are assessing damage caused by an apparent tornado. The storm hit the center of town last night. At least five homes were destroyed and as many as 35 others damaged. One person was treated for minor injuries. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are forecast this afternoon from St. Cloud North. There's a chance of showers in parts of southern Minnesota. Highs should range from 65 near Duluth to 82 near Rochester. In the Twin Cities, more clouds will move in this afternoon. There's a 30% chance of rain and thunderstorms. The high should hit 80. Now to look at the latest news from Minnesota Public Radio, I'm Kathleen Hallinan.
Welcome back to our Main Street special, live from the band shelter at the Clay County Fair in Barnesville. I'm Rachel Reby. My guest is newspaper columnist and therapist Val Farmer. Listeners, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-800-537-5252. And the rain is holding off for the moment. We can see just a peak of blue skies, but it is cold up here. Wear your polar fleece when you come to Barnesville today anyway. We're going now to a member of our live audience. Lori Sturdivant is standing by.
Yes, I have with me Carolyn Weber of Crookston, who likes to call herself a recovering farmer, though she confesses she still has a little bit of hand in agriculture. Carolyn, your comment.
Well, first, Rachel, the comment that you made earlier about the wind was blowing and the rain was coming down, that was just a breeze.
Compared to what you're used to here. Thank you for putting that in perspective for
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. I just would like to comment on some of the things that Mr. Nelson has experiencing as we experienced those things in our life as farmers about 5 years ago when my husband experienced some health problems, and we did decide at that time, due to both health and economic reasons, to transition to something different. And I thought, is there a way that you can still stay in agriculture even if you're not family farming? I've found out that we can, but that doesn't mean without taking certain steps and sometimes having to give up things that we believe to be true for forever. Like, we had a future that was agriculture. It was farming, family farming. And we already were retired and had our kids moving out there before we even lived our life. So today we have a little bit different future. I went back to the University of Minnesota in Kirsten and got an ag degree. Now, how's that going to help me up here at this time? Well, I'm trying to find my way through that. My husband worked at a couple of different jobs that weren't exactly what he wanted, but he did what he needed to do. And I guess what I'd like to offer is a sound of hope that even though there is hopelessness soundingness sometimes, and that's how we felt in that also, but that, I don't know, you address that living in the rural Minnesota and having that spirit. I think that sometimes it goes beyond just living in rural Minnesota. It's a part of being a Minnesotan, or I don't think that the only place that we raise good people in this state is in the rural area. I've made some really good friends in the city, or people that used to live in the country that live in the city. And that, I don't know, working together sometimes sounds kind of cliche, but I think that's where we're going to find our hope. And or I find it in getting up and pulling weeds out of the flowers or whatever it happens to be. And it's not easy. I don't think that if you spoke with my husband, he would give a different voice also. But that living here still has some possibilities. And so with that, I'll pass it back to Lori.
Thank you. Dr. Farmer, is it important to let go, as this woman just said, that future that she had all mapped out for herself, to say, okay, that's not going to be my future. Now I've got to move on. But how do you do that when you still really want that to be your future?
Well, you do it because you have to do it. And the first 2 or 3 years that a farm family leaves the farm, they really go through some adjustments. They haven't connected with that next thing that's going to give them pleasure and energize them and help them make a living and solve some of the financial problems that have been created. But once they make that connection, then life gets to be good. And they're also out from underneath all of the debt load and the pressures and the stress and the uncertainty of agriculture. And they have evenings with their family and weekends and vacations, and they make good friends, and they find out that the urban area isn't the big scary place that they've always imagined it to be. And I really do believe that for 80 to 85% of the people that leave agriculture, within 3 or 4 years there is life after farming, that they make a good adjustment and that they do grow from hard experiences. They may not be growing financially, but they have grown in character and resiliency, and they've discovered something new and better about themselves, and they're finding that they can be happy again.
So those things that don't kill us help us.
Right. Yep, you got that.
And advice for the Nelson family. We heard Lowell Nelson pour out this unbelievably tragic story of what he thought his future was going to be and how at 54 that part of his future is over. How do you help a guy like Lowell Nelson?
Well, I think you can help him by realizing that his boys are going to be just fine, and they're going to make good lives, are already making good lives, and that he needs to worry about himself. The idea of failing them in some way he should let go of and not worry about that. He needs to make his own transition to something else. He's got health problems to deal with first, and I think that's right. But then he has to find that something different and really connect with it. And I've done some reporting in my column of the creative cycle in life, and it's not how old we are when we start something new. It's the fact that we start something new that counts. And you can start something new at age 54 and have a wonderful creative cycle to the new thing that you do, and it'll last for 20 years. And so it's a way of keeping young, is to make big changes in your life. And this world is full of ex-farmers that have gone on and have been successful in other things because they've found that something different. Not that they chose it, they had to choose it, choose something different.
And I hope for Lowell Nelson it happens quickly.
Oh, I do too.
Our phone number, 1-800-537-5252. If you have a question for Dr. Val Farmer, or if you have your own experience you would like to talk about, please call us, 1-800-537-5252. We go to the phones now. Tom is standing by in Kettle River. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon. I've been catching bits and pieces of this program as I've gone in and out from doing my farm work on a daily basis here. And I kind of feel like there needs to be a little bit more perspective put onto this whole farming crisis scenario. One is that the farming scenario and the farming crisis has been brought upon by two things. One, the university system of the United States, who have propagated the theory that bigger is better and more equipment and larger equipment is going to give you more time for having free time. And what this actually does is becomes, the farmer then becomes a slave to the financial institution. The financial institution has, in the past, looked at the farmer and said, you're $200,000 in debt. And the farmer comes in there and says, I want to buy a new tractor, and the price of corn is up, or the price of soybeans is up, or the mill prices are up, land prices are up, and the banking institution says, fine, I'll give you that money today. Well, then a year from now, the price of milk drops down to zero. The soybeans have dropped in the bucket. The price of land has gone all to the devil. And so the farmer is then overextended, and he can't make the money that he needs to pay off that debt. So it's a situation where the financial institutions, the university, and the farmer have to take part of that blame because they've overextended themselves on an artificially inflated price for whatever commodity they're selling.
Dr. Farmer, does it help to know who you can put the blame on? Does it? You talked about in the 80s, a lot of animosity targeted towards the lenders. Does that help? Does it make us feel better? Is that kicking the dog? Do we actually feel better after it?
Oh, I think it makes us feel better if we feel like we understand the big picture and that we're shielding some of that blame from ourselves. I don't think it's all that helpful if that's all you think about, because you need to look at your own personal situation, your own financial statement, make your own management decisions, and so you have to survive on a personal level. And people that there might be leaders and other people that can fight that fight and change things that need to be changed. But if you're under financial pressure, you need to really concentrate on the local situation, your own farm, and making your own life happy and successful, supporting one another, caring about one another, communicating well, and not be continually talking about these external forces. I think you have to zero in on yourselves and do some work there.
So we see a huge continuum. The person like Lowell Nelson, who's taking the blame for the crisis in Southeast Asia, and then someone who's putting all the blame on somebody else. We need to be someplace in the middle, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I really think there's plenty of blame to go around, but I think we need to be thinking, and the way farmers cope, anybody copes, is to change that raw emotion into thoughts and to problem solving. And farmers are good at problem solving, but they have to make that transition.
1-800-537-5252 is our phone number to join our conversation. We go to Winona. Good afternoon, Joyce. Welcome to Main Street.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up on a farm in southeastern Minnesota, Caledonia. And I had three sisters, so there were four girls on the farm only, and we had a great life. And what I try to remember about that is that's how I was raised, that's the family. Wonderful memories. I tried to pass it on to my son, talk to him about what happened. My parents just recently sold the farm because they were 30.
Joyce, we are having a very difficult time hearing you. I think we have cell phone problems. Why don't we go, we're going to put you on hold for a minute, see if we can't straighten those out. But first, we're going back to St. Paul to find out about a weather warning at this point. John Raby?
Thanks, Rachel. The National Weather Service in the Twin Cities has issued a tornado warning for southern Chisago County in east central Minnesota and for Polk County in northwestern Wisconsin. It's in effect until 1:15 this afternoon. And actually, law enforcement has reported two or three tornadoes from storms scattered in a line from North Branch to Balsam Lake. The storms are moving east to southeast at 25 miles an hour. Some locations affected include Lindstrom, Center City, St. Croix Falls, Osceola, and Dresser. Go to the basement or a small interior room on the lowest floor if you are in the path of this storm. Once again, the essentials, a tornado warning for southern Chisago County in east central Minnesota and Polk County in northwestern Wisconsin. It's in effect until 1:15 this afternoon, and the tornadoes reported from storms scattered in a line from North Branch to Balsam Lake, including Lindstrom, Center City, St. Croix Falls, Osceola, and Dresser. And Rachel will let you know more if more crops up on the weather scene. Back to you.
John Raby, thank you for putting our weather in perspective. I guess this wind and the cloudy skies don't look so bad after hearing about a tornado watch on the other side of the state. We are going now to Commissioner Bob Carlson from Pennington County. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for bringing these programs to Outstate and the state of Minnesota. Mr. Nelson, sitting listening to you, my heart goes out to you. We go to these meetings, and they keep telling the farmers that they've got to do something different. They've got to diversify. My question to you is, diversify to what? What would they expect you to raise other if you were a wheat farmer or heavy in canola or heavy in all small grains, telling farmers to diversify and look for a special niche? What are the possibilities of success in that route?
Commissioner Carlson, let me ask you another question. From Pennington County, we've talked about Pennington County today already on this program. Do you feel this sense of gloom and despair among the farmers? And are you able to talk about it?
It's terrible. It's raining here again. It was raining yesterday. I was up to Rosa, Minnesota on Monday and Tuesday. In the evening, some people thought as they looked out over the landscape, they were looking out over a lake. 30% of the crop got in Roseau County this year. I seen kids in a canoe out in a field. This is what's going on in northwestern Minnesota. You know, this is so unique when we get five counties up here. Marshall, Kitson, Pennington, Roseau, Red Lake counties. We are a pocket in the state that has taken such a beating. And what forecast do we have to look forward to? They're saying another five-year cycle of wet. My God, I don't know how much more these people can take, and I don't know how much more small Main Street Minnesota is going to be able to take. I've lived here all my life. I've been an elected official for 40 years of my 73 years. And I tell you, the doom and gloom is here. I even hate to go to meetings because I come away feeling bad about what the farmer is going through. And I listened to Congressman Peterson this morning. We can go to the moon, and we can bomb the hell out of Yugoslavia, and now we're going to rebuild them. Can't somebody do something about the farm problem? It seems like somebody wants this to happen and wants this to continue to happen to these people. I just don't understand it.
Carlson, when you talk about the weather, does it make it easier when the weather is bad, or is it difficult to blame God for your problems?
Well, I don't want to start picking on him. I would think most farmers would rather go through a moderate dry, well, I know they would, season, than to have to go through what we've gone through up here in this five-county area in the northwestern part of Minnesota. It's just unbearable.
Thank you for calling this
afternoon. Mr. Nelson, you hang in there.
Dr. Farmer, this despair and this angst, especially when it's weather-related, and you see it over, and then he hears it's going to be another 5 years of it. When you've got an enemy that you cannot fight, all the letters, all the calls, all the marches, all the rallies, nothing is going to change whatever the weather is going to be. So how do you deal with that?
Well, you have to accept it. You have to understand that there's some things you don't have control over. What I appreciated about his remarks was that he was telling the story of those five counties and what's happening to people up there, how they're feeling, and people in agriculture need to tell their personal story. They need to feel cared about. They need to be able to talk it out with someone. They need to feel normal. And just at this program, I'm sure, is helping a lot of people understand that they're in it together with a lot of other people, and that it's not just them that's suffering. Putting your emotions into words is the first step in problem solving, and I'm sure that it's a small thing, but for a person that's suffering, it's a big thing.
Are farmers as reticent as the stereotypes make them out to be? Garrison talks about the Norwegian bachelor farmers. The one thing that characterizes them is they never talk. Is it difficult for farmers to talk about this? Does that take a tremendous amount of courage on the part of Lowell Nelson to get up here and say, I feel like I'm blaming myself for everything. I feel like I have failed.
We need more examples like that. We need people to be able to speak out and talk about what's going on in their lives, and to know that that it's okay to be suffering under these conditions. Farmers are reticent to talk, and there's something to that, and we need to encourage the open discussion of problems and feelings when things are out of control. And talking to your spouse, talking to a best friend, talking to anybody is a good coping technique. And that's one of the main messages of helping people cope, is to express your emotion and find out that as you talk, that your mind starts to become sharper. You begin to formulate your ideas, and you also give people a chance to care about you when they understand what you're going through.
In your practice, are you seeing more farmers come in for counseling help? When we were in East Grand Forks and did a show after the flood, what the therapist told me up there is, we still can't get them to come in. Their whole life has been destroyed, and they won't come in and get help unless it becomes an alcohol problem, unless it becomes an abuse problem. She said that when those things happen, then they're more likely to get them in. Won't they come in before that?
Well, let me say, when it becomes a marital problem, and the wife often is the person who takes the lead and gets the couple in for counseling, and part of their relationship is under discussion and how it can be better, but also their situation in farming. And so sometimes it's the women that take the lead in getting the help to that farm family. Once the farmer is in the office, he can talk just like anybody else, but it's a big
step. It's getting there.
Yeah, it's getting there. That's a tough thing.
Our phone number, 1-800-537-5252. We go back to our live audience in Barnesville at the Clay County Fair.
Yes, I have with me John Everett, a Clay County commissioner, another former farmer from here in Barnesville. And John works with an organization that brings farmers together.
Yes, I work with Rural Life Outreach of Northwest Minnesota. That's helping farmers trying to get through the transitions that they are working through. My question, Dr. Farmer, is... we've heard a lot, and you know, you and other counselors do a marvelous job in helping the individual once they get to you and in finding the help they need. I think there's another area that we sometimes are not dealing with enough, and I know our organization does not spend enough time with that, and that's helping the neighbors and family and friends know how to deal with the farmer who's struggling and maybe losing his farm. I've said before, it's kind of like a funeral. You don't know what to say to people. Can you give us some suggestions as how we as neighbors and friends and family can support people going through this this transition?
I think being sensitive, being around them, picking up on small things that they say and turning it into a conversation. They are dropping hints, and they need to talk, they need to feel cared about. And so having outreach situations, people having churches care, having people not pass judgments on one another. I think there's people in farm country are really suspicious about being judged by other people. And if there's a attitude in the community about we don't judge each other, this is facing everybody, and there's tough things that are happening here.
Lowell Nelson, what have people said to you that helped, and what have they said that made it worse?
Well, I don't think anybody's made it worse, but it's a very simple thing to do. All you gotta do is come over. I've had so many people drive into my yard unannounced just to come and visit, just to come and see me. That's all it takes. You don't have to say anything. Just being there, just showing up, knows that you care and that you want to help. That's the important thing. And like I say, people have been so wonderful to myself and my family and showing so much support. It's just been overwhelming, especially to me. But it's not necessarily what you say when you get there. It's just driving in. It's just visiting me in the hospital. It's just being there in person. That's all you need to do.
And the fact that
things are going better for them financially or health-wise, that doesn't make you feel worse. Sometimes we think that, well, things are going too good for me. I feel terrible for him. What would I possibly say to him?
I've had one very good friend of mine. I was on my way down to Rochester to get a second opinion on some surgery, and I called him on my cell phone to let them know that I was headed down there. He made a comment to me. He said, Lowell, he said, life isn't always fair, is it? And he's absolutely right. And that's just something you've got to deal with. And just accept that life isn't always fair.
Thank you, Lowell Nelson. We go to George now in Minneapolis, who is standing by on the phone. Good afternoon, George.
Good afternoon. First of all, I want to say to Mr. Nelson, my thoughts are all with him. But I think our Congress should be able to do something for the farmers. I mean, there's a lot of good operators out there not making it anymore because of the decreased price situation. I've had two nephews had to get out of farming because, and they were good operators just because of the decreased price situation of the crops. And the commissioner from Northwest Minnesota, I agree with him. I mean, we can bomb... we can bob over in Europe, we can then rebuild them, but nobody seems to care about the family farm. And I think it's time that somebody really does, because we're at the commodity that's not going to be here. And when it's gone, we're all going to be in big trouble.
Is it difficult in these days of a wonderful economy? People are talking about let the good times roll. It's never been better. Our unemployment is so low. Wages are high. It's easy to get a loan. Does that make it even worse for people who are finding themselves going down, down, down?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the keys to good mental health is not to compare ourselves to people that are better off than ourselves, and especially the big urban economy that's rolling along. We want to feel better about ourselves. We need to find someone that's less fortunate and care for them and do for them, and then we feel better about ourselves no matter what our situation is.
And we are out of time here on this Main Street special. Dr. Farmer, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a special Minnesota Citizens Forum focusing on the farm crisis, a joint venture between NPR, KTCA Public Television, the Star Tribune newspaper, and the University of Minnesota Extension Service. This special Main Street radio broadcast is a production of Minnesota Public Radio. Our engineers are Rick Kaczynski and Cliff Bentley in Barnesville, Randy Johnson in St. Paul. Our producer is Sarah Meyer, site producer Lori Sturtevant of the Star Tribune, and NPR's Leif Enger. Our executive producer, Mel Summer. We'd like to thank Elaine Austin and the Fair Board here in Clay County for making this broadcast possible. NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant making, leadership training, and convening.